Chapter 20. Sunset for Zachnophane. Catty Bree couldn't take her eyes off of Zachnophane. His breathing was labored, likely from the weight of the swelling on his chest. Elena had quietly assured her that he wouldn't die this night. The Chaos Phage was accelerating now, as it had taken more than half of his physical body, and the Avendrow had seen this before and so could now, they believed, accurately track the demise. Elena hadn't admitted it openly, but Catty Bree thought that he would certainly expire the next day. The magic wouldn't be back by then. Catty Bree couldn't help him. That was the worst part of all, the helplessness. Jarlaxle sat between her and Zack's litter, holding his oldest friend's hand, often tenderly stroking the back of Zack's hand. This was tearing him apart, Catty Bree could see. All of the companions had watched friends die in battle, suddenly, brutally, but in an unsubtle way. This withering was worse. She was so focused on Zack that it took her a moment to realize that the Grand Colosseum had gone perfectly silent around her. She turned to Elena to ask about it, but the priestess put a finger over pursed lips to silence her, then pointed to the sky. Catty Bree looked up. It was a long while before she looked back down. The last couple of days had been low daylight, the circling sun barely below the horizon, locking the land in perpetual twilight. Now, for the first time since Catty Bree and her companions had arrived here, and for the first time in half a year, if her guess was correct, the sky above deepened in darkness, a true fall of night. The stars seemed as soft lights gaining in intensity, igniting a million tiny fires in the black void about them. The distant celestial smoke, as they called it in Icewind Dale, came clearly into view, as clearly as anything she had seen atop Kelvin's cairn, like a double streak of parallel clouds running across a section of the sky. The waning half-moon hung low, a backward D, its pale-hearted light turning the Grand Colosseum a bluer white, much like the uniforms of Biancorso. She took a deep breath, relieved to see the night sky again, and yes, thinking it magical as Elena had told her. "It is beautiful," she whispered to the woman beside her. "Wait," she replied. "It has only just begun." Catty Bree wasn't sure what she might be talking about. But before she could ask for clarification, the whole of the Caliday gathering began to chant again, somberly, a different tune whose few words made Catty Bree think they were calling to the sky itself, asking for something. She blinked then, a few times, thinking it a trick of her eyes when she saw a ribbon of green light appear. She even rubbed her eyes. But no, it remained and grew and was limned in purple and blue here and there. It became a floating curtain, drifting fabric folds of shimmering green undulating in waves, as if the bottom half of a rainbow had torn free on hurricane winds to hang here at the top of Toril. On rare occasions, she had seen this as a green glow, she believed, from Icewind Dale. But never had she imagined anything of this magnitude and magic. For it was more than the sight of the waving colored sheets of light. Catty Bree could feel the tingles of magic in the air. In her gut and in her mind, she knew that there was magic all about her, energizing her. She broke her gaze from the beauty and turned it upon Zack. She thought his breathing seemed steadier, maybe just a bit. The healers expected that the Ale Baleri would be good for him, Elena confirmed. It helps with injuries, though only marginally. Still, it might bring him some relief here, at least, that he can better enjoy these final hours of his life. The last few words shook Catty Bree. But still, the name Elena had used, Ale Baleri or Merry Dancers, struck her as perfect for the windy ribbons above her. The singing transformed then into, ah, climbing explosively, and then the thump sent the ball high into the air, beginning the battle finale between Biancorso and Boscale. It was hard to tear her eyes from the sky, but the action on the rink demanded it of her. The players were surely tired and battered. Their uniforms were all stained with blood. But from the moment the ball descended, the intensity of the battle made the previous three Catti Bree had witnessed seem gentle. She thought she was watching a fight to the death. Bodies flew and crashed together. A scrambling swarm of guards and warriors turned the middle of the rink into respective battlements. Shield walls without the shields, burying anyone passing through one line or the other, whether that person was carrying the ball or not. The crowd cheered and gasped with every shift, every punch, every throw that got anywhere near one of the window goals. Catti Bree couldn't tell which team the Mona Chess or Arden fans cheered. It didn't seem to matter. The volume itself was all-encompassing and never diminished. Above the rink, the merry dancers swayed and intensified, as if drinking the rising noise and drawing energy from it. It seemed to be reciprocal, for the minutes wore on and the game did not slow. As one, the crowd cheered a Boscale guard, who remained and fought, even though his forearm was clearly broken. Catti Bree could see the weird bend in the limb even from this distance. But he didn't stop, even throwing himself in a cross-body block to take down two Biancorso soldiers, including Vessi, who was trying to break free around the end of the line to get behind the Boscale defenders. Alina and Emilian cheered the valiant guard from the other army, then went right back to urging Biancorso to punish and vanquish the lumberjack blockheads. Catti Bree thought she knew all of the swear words in the language of the drow, but she learned many more that first polar night. Back and forth it went, a purely defensive battle. At one point, all 50 soldiers were entangled in a vast melee, the ball lost somewhere beneath them, and not a one even looking for it. When finally the scrum relaxed, a Biancorso dasher scooping the ball and sprinting out toward the goal, it looked almost as if a third line, a bloody red one, had been drawn in between the two black central lines. The cheering reached volumes not heard earlier in the day. The players ran harder, fought harder than they had earlier in the day, and Catti Bree began to understand when she too started to scream. It was the sky above urging them on. The merry dancers were lending power to the soldiers and the fans alike, lifting them with energy as sure as any empowering spell. She couldn't believe it. She looked to Zack to see him panting with excitement, to see that, yes, his pain had seemingly diminished, and he too was caught up in the moment. She knew that he wished he could be down there, fighting, competing. She closed her eyes with that thought, knowing she would miss him, fearing that she would have to tell Drizzt that he had lost his father yet again. Sad that Bree would never know this wonderful man. She shook it away. "Enjoy the night," she determinedly whispered under her breath. "What happens if no one scores?" she asked Alina. And that seemed more and more likely, for they were certainly nearing the end time of the battle. "Then there is no champion. They won't play on?" Emilian and Alina both laughed at that. "Even on this magical night, there is only so much to give," Alina said. "Glory shared, glory diminished," she shrugged. Catti Bree focused again on the battle. Certainly it seemed to be going toward that scoreless end, as no soldier from either team was getting anywhere near the opposite goal. The game went into a lull then, with both sides shifting and moving formations, as if trying to plot one last chance to steal victory. Biancorso possessed the ball, though, and that gave them the advantage. Suddenly the whole team swerved to the left, moving near the far wall. A pair of Biancorso dashers broke away just as suddenly, running hard across the rink, along the wall below Catti Bree. But Boscale caught on to the ruse, and defenders angled to intercept the breaking dashers. But that was the feint within a feint, Catti Bree suddenly realized, as Vessi ran up full speed into the scrum across the way, and the Biancorso allies parted the defenders enough for him to slide through. He popped up and seemed to be running free as a Biancorso warrior heaved the ball through the air toward him. But no, a Boscale dasher, half-kneeling, was only faking injury along that far wall, and she came out low where the hurling Biancorso warrior couldn't even see her, and undercut the angle, rushing right behind the reaching Vessi to pluck the ball from the air, and in full stride toward the near wall, running free before Vessi could react, before any of the Biancorso soldiers even realized what had happened. Except for one. Azudana broke from the scrum when the ball went into the air, angling across the rink, and now was the only one with a chance to stop the speedy Boscale dasher. The crowd gasped and cheered as the two neared, Azudana desperately trying to find an angle to intercept, the dasher sprinting harder. If she could get by this lone defender, no one could catch her all the way to the window goal. The merry dancers swirled above, the crowd roared, the dasher put her head down, and Azudana, at the last moment, pumped her legs furiously, driving forward, then threw herself to the ice in a slide. She clipped the legs of the dasher, sending her flying head over heels to crash awkwardly to the ice, then slid fast to slam into the wall below the companions. Azudana couldn't slow her desperate dive either, and slammed into the wall as well, and the Shellobel fans groaned as one. Caddy Bree couldn't see her, but thought from the impact and the groans from those onlookers who could that she might be terribly injured, or even dead. But no, she climbed to her feet and dove upon the fallen dasher, grabbing the ball, fighting for it, tugging the dasher along until the battered Boscale woman finally fell free. On ran Azudana across the center lines, blood pouring from her nose. And yet she had nowhere to go, as the defenders who had chased after Vessi and the other dasher were moving to block, and all the others were now swarming across the ice. With a scream that rose above the cheers, Azudana put her head down and charged forward for the blue line. She can't cross that line, Caddy Bree reminded herself and her friends. But Azudana wasn't slowing. No, she instead threw herself to her knees in a forward spin, around and around, and right before she reached the blue line, the last spin around, she planted a foot to throw her up to her feet, still turning, her right arm far back behind her turned shoulders, the ball cupped in her bent wrist. Around she came powerfully, heaving the ball with all her strength. It cleared the approaching Boscale defender, cleared the other two, and Vessi and his companion, and flew on, and the Grand Colosseum fell silent in a communal gasp of anticipation. The ball arced down gracefully and hit the inside far rim of the window. It ricocheted back, then back again, disappearing from sight, and still the crowd gasped, for if it stayed in, the point would count, but if it fell out, then no victor seemed certain. The ball came out, but not through the window. Somehow, whether from the spin or a chip of ice on the jamb of the goal, or simple luck or force of will from Azudana under the magical light, the Ga made it deep into the goal and fell down the slide, exiting through the hole at the base of the wall. Two, Emilia and Elena, and nearly 20,000 other Shellobel onlookers screamed. The Boscale defender scooped up the ball, but Vessi buried him where he stood, bearing him to the ice, tying him and the ball up to kill the time. That very dimension seemed to stop on the rink, seconds lasting almost minutes, minutes practically years, all the while Boscale soldiers grabbing at their hair and Biancorso soldiers leaping and cheering. Not Azudana, though. The woman moved to the wall directly below where the companions were seated and held up her arm, her wrist adorned with a strip of cloth torn from Zaknafane's shirt. "Per te, mie Zaknafane," she yelled. "For you, my Zaknafane." And she kept yelling, "Per te, mie Zaknafane," with all her voice, with all her strength, with all her tears for this doomed man whom she had championed this night, this stranger in whose honor she had found the strength to make that throw. "Per te, mie Zaknafane," she yelled. "Per te, mie Zaknafane," the Biancorso soldiers joined in on the next refrain. "Per te, mie Zaknafane," the Biancorso fans joined in on the next refrain, and then something happened that somehow seemed more magical still, something that touched Caddy Bree and Intrary and Jarlaxle more than anything they had yet witnessed in Shellobel. An Arctos Orok Boscale warrior had pulled the ball from Vessi and was sprinting up the rink, but he skidded to a stop and dropped the ball to the ice, stepping upon it with a heavy foot. "Per te, mie Zaknafane," the orc cried, and all of the Boscale soldiers similarly stopped and shouted in the next refrain, and then, "Per te, mie Zaknafane," the 50,000 Caladeans chanted in unison and harmony. On and on it went, louder and louder with each refrain, and the merry dancer lights above seemed to sway and dart with every syllable. 50,000 voices lifted in the chant. 50,000 Avendrau, Kurit, Ulutians, and Arctos Aurochs jabbed their fingers to point at Zacnaphane, this stranger they did not know, this poor fellow who had stumbled upon their land and seemed to be in the last hours of his life. Per te mie Zacnaphane! Catti Bree sobbed, and then began laughing uncontrollably. She didn't know why. What is happening? She asked those around her, and noted that Entreri too was rocking between tears and laughter, and Jarlaxle's shoulders bobbed with sobs, or perhaps with confused joy. What is happening? Per te mie Zacnaphane! I don't know, Alina yelled back at her. I don't know. No one knew, but they all felt it. And they chanted and they pointed, and almost as if they were directing the merry dancers, or maybe it was just a trick of the angle and glow, a green and purple ribbon seemed to Catti Bree to reach down from the polar night and touch Zack, and he smiled. His huge, stretched, frog-like mouth smiled. The chant began to diminish, but then Zack suddenly pulled himself up from the litter and growled and fought and stood, crooked and broken. But he stood, and all of Caladay cheered for him. Catti Bree looked down to the rink, to Azudonna and the Boscale Dasher she had flipped, leaning on each other for support, the both of them calling for Zacnaphane. Zacnaphane straightened. No more did he labor for breath. Swollen and twisted, his skin angry red, he wouldn't surrender, and Catti Bree knew then. She just knew. He would fight the phage until the magic returned. Zacnaphane would live. What have we just seen? Catti Bree managed to ask Jarlaxle. Everything I always dreamed of, he answered through sniffles and embarrassed little chuckles of joy.